understand something. Why is it that, I mean, he's like a serial exaggerator or fabricator of his own personal narrative. He's been asked about it twice, once by Dana Bash, once in this debate. And in both cases, he sort of defaulted to some, like in Dana's case, it was, I don't have good grammar. Tonight, I think he said, you know, well, I'm just a knucklehead. Why can't you just sort of own up to it? I don't understand. Yeah. I know you said people think he's authentic and that, you know, this is just who he is. But he has clearly gone way over the line on his own personal narrative, something that only he would know the facts of.
Yeah.
And he's done it repeatedly. And when asked about it, effectively, he's just like, well, I'm too dumb to tell the truth.
You know, Scott Jennings on CNN there talking about the serial exaggeration of Tim Walz. It's interesting because the exaggeration that you get from Tim Walz, there's not also this other understanding of who he is. There's not really other substance outside of the exaggeration other than the insistence that we call him coach. Like, that's just supposed to mean something. Let's get to our friend Jerroy Murdoch to talk about last night's vice presidential debate, nationally syndicated columnist and Fox News contributor. Jerroy, welcome back. What'd you think of last night's debate?
Andy, great to talk to you again. I thought it was a very good night for J.D. Vance. He came in with a lot of people having heard that he's mean and weird and cold, misogynistic, maybe racist, and he came across, I think, as calm, incredibly relaxed, self-confident in a good way without being arrogant, and very empathetic. I think at one point, Wall said something about his 17-year-old son witnessing somebody being shot, and Vance said, well, I'm very sorry to hear your son went through that traumatic experience, or words to that effect. I thought he came across as very open and very interested in the plight of women, talking about women being able to earn more money, to give themselves more options, being able to have more financial success to take care of things like childcare. And I thought the humility he expressed on abortion, that the GOP had to do better on that issue, I think really was just very candid about the fact that GOP's had trouble expressing ourselves very clearly on that issue since the Dobbs decision. I think that humility probably went far towards giving him at least a second look on the part of maybe even pro-abortion women who might have turned their backs on him initially.
Yeah, I think that there was such a human element. I'll even extend it over to Tim Walz last night to be able to watch two candidates who were supposed to be on opposite sides of the political aisle have a conversation that was still shrouded in a gentlemanly exchange of thoughts and ideas. There wasn't really any raised voices. The only raised voice that might have come from last night was J.D. Vance talking over the muted mics. No muted mics, no fact checking. And there you have CBS muting J.D. Vance's mic after they fact-check him incorrectly, and he fact-checks the fact-checkers, but they apparently didn't want to have anything to do with that.
Yeah, we heard from CBS that they were going to break from what we'd seen in the previous, not so much the first debate, but certainly the second, with the moderators fact-checking Trump 5 times, Kamala Harris 0 times, even though Kamala Harris said repeated things that weren't true. And despite the all the publicity about, oh, we'll leave the fact-checking to candidates, the moderators, in fact, fact-checked J.D. Vance a couple times, and he fact-checked the fact-checker, if you will, on that. So I thought that was well done. And yes, I agree with you. The debate was incredibly cordial and very low-key. I guess there just isn't that level of animosity that you saw in the debate between Trump and Harris, who, as far as I can tell, pretty much loathe each other. And I think the Trump-Biden debate, where Trump was pretty restrained, he didn't seem to get angry, but I don't think there's much love lost between Joe Biden and Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, DeRoy, when you were listening to Tim Walz and his exaggerations, and we've listened to Kamala Harris repeat the same lines over and over and over again. She was raised in a middle class family. We know that. I don't even know what it means at this point.
Yeah, what does that mean, right?
I mean, many people were. And if you rise above that, that's still something to champion. I think that the right is correct on that issue. But we don't have a lot about what these two individuals on this Democrat ticket want to do that is different than what we are experiencing right now while Kamala Harris is in office as the vice president of the United States. Are they trying to make a case that it's a new way forward other than just saying over and over and over it's a new way forward?
you know, I'd love to hear a candidate come out and either say, I was born dirt poor. You know, we barely could find dinner every night. You know, we had to forage through garbage cans for lunch. Or I was born on a yacht. We had caviar every night. I mean, either one of those things would be refreshing at this point. Everyone seems to be born in the middle class. I think you make the same point that J.D. Vance made a couple of times, which is if the ideas Kamala Harris is presenting as the new way forward are so great, why does she go to Joe and say, Joe, hey, why don't we push this? Let's sign this now. Frankly, if she did that and she could get these things signed while she's, you know, on the campaign trail, imagine Joe Biden, flying out, meeting her somewhere in Arizona or Pennsylvania or Wisconsin and signing the bill that, provides this $5,000 down payment for housing, or the price gouging legislation that she wants to do, whatever it is. She's had 3.5 years to push these ideas if they're so brilliant, and she hasn't done so. And if she is pushing a new way forward, a question that suggests that the current way is one that ought to be abandoned, except the current way from which we'd be going forward is the way which we're on now for the last 3.5, going on 4 years under Harris and Biden. So she's in the unusual situation of being essentially an incumbent who, rather than embracing her own program, as Ronald Reagan did when he promoted Republicans in the 82, this goes back 42 years now, in the 1982 midterm elections, the slogan all Republicans used was stay the course, you know, could continue with Reaganomics. The thought was during the recession of 82 that the benefits hadn't kicked in, but if we stayed the course, eventually they would, which they did. But instead, she's saying we need to get off this course we're on. Don't stay the course, abandon the course, even though the course is the one that she's produced. And if it's such a wonderful thing, we should reward her, even though she's basically saying the current way forward is a bad one. We need a new one, which suggests that we need to get rid of the incumbent. So it's a very contradictory message, which is why Harris and Wall seem to trip over their words so often.
Yeah. Troy Murdock speaking with us right now, Fox News contributor and nationally syndicated columnist. All of this to say it just matters what the American people, the American voter, takes away from it. I mean, we have one debate where I think we could summarize the whole thing, and they're eating the cats and they're eating the dogs. I had seventh grade volleyball players singing that at a volleyball practice, and I'm like, do you know who said that? And they're like, yeah, Trump. And I was like, okay, keep serving. It's so bizarre that you can have these things of great consequence. They get on the internet, they get transformed into memes. It just matters what the American people take away from it. And we might be done with debates right now. Do you think that they've swayed the American public one way or the other?
Well, I mean, certainly the first debate did. That was the end of Joe Biden's political career. So that was probably the most consequential political debate ever. I think the second one seemed to be kind of a wash. I think, frankly, Kamala Harris did a better job in the debate than Trump did, although the polls didn't really reflect that. She didn't get much of a bounce. In fact, Trump might have gone up a couple of points afterwards. I think that this debate last night definitely will work, I think, to some degree to Trump's benefit. Again, we'd heard from the media. They just, of course, went completely overboard, talking about all sorts of bizarre things about J.D. Vance having, I'm trying to think, how can I put this politely in a family-related program, a deep and abiding interest in furniture.
Let's a relationship that. With a cat.
A relationship for anybody who wants to look that up can go look that up
or
on your own.
Yeah,
and, the thing about single women with cats, you know, the cat ladies and all this, and that he deep down doesn't like women, and he's weird and on and on. So I think people who didn't know much about him probably tuned in expecting to see that. And that guy wasn't there. We saw a young, very self-confident, very well-spoken political leader who was very much in charge of his brief and understood what to say and was very, very relaxed and calm. And then with Tim Walz, who a lot of people may never have seen before, he seemed very jumpy, very nervous, very defensive. He couldn't give a clear answer as to whether he showed up in China before, during, or after the Tiananmen Square massacre. His answer to that was just a mess. He could have said, look, you know, I guess, after, 35 years, I got the date screwed up. Sorry about that. No, that would have been a credible answer. I conflated my arrival there with what happened a couple months earlier, and I mashed the two together. People do that sort of thing. But, he didn't give a clear answer. He seemed very, very evasive on that. And I thought probably the best line of the night, as far as I'm concerned, was when J.D. Vance said that President Trump doesn't just have a plan, he has a record, and talked about all the stuff that that Trump did when he was president, that he's already been president for 4 years, and we had an economy that was thriving at the time. We had peace in the Middle East. We didn't have Iranian missiles landing in Tel Aviv and throughout Israel. We had the Abraham Accords with, Bahrain, Dubai, Morocco and Sudan signing peace agreements with Israel. Peace breaking out all over. Now look at the place. The place is literally in flames. So I thought that was a very good way of reminding people that Trump has been there before, and he was there up until COVID. We had things in pretty good shape. The border was under control. Crime was under control. Inflation was 1.4% versus almost 3% now, and as high as 9.1% at one point under Biden and Harris. I think the one thing I wish Vance had done. Number one is, I think every time Vance and Trump speak before any audience, get in front of any mic, they should ask the question: are you better off now under Kamala Harris, or were you better off under Trump? And I think almost anybody objectively will say things are better under Trump. Number one. Number two, in three debates, both the Trump-Biden debate, the Trump-Harris debate, and then the Vance-Walls debate, I did not hear either Republican discuss no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, or no tax on Social Security benefits. Those are three big ideas, very good ideas, and I don't know why they're not in these fantastic opportunities to share them with tens of millions of American people, not discussing those policies. But for some reason, they just forget to bring them up, which is really too bad.
Yeah, it really is quite something. Well, I think that we've got 34 days left in Illinois, where I live. People are voting already.
And unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. But we got to get out, and we've got to get poll workers signed up. We have to work to get ballots harvested where it's legal to do that. You know, the Democrats are going to be doing it.
And
I really think that, you know, we have these conversations right here, and it helps people kind of think through and develop their own perspectives on these issues. But the real measurable effect of debates like this, it gets people talking, and those person-to-person contacts that are happening, not on the radio, but, you know, in the office or with family or at the sports game that evening, I think those are the ones that are going to have a major impact. I think you do a wonderful job of helping lead those conversations for those people when they listen to the show.
Well, thank you very much. And I agree with you. You know, a lot of people think, gee, what can I do? I don't own a PAC. I can't write a, you know, $50,000 check, whatever. You know, if you can't do anything else, register to vote yourself. Make sure your friends and relatives and neighbors are registered to vote. When you go to vote, bring those folks with you. And then in your conversations with your friends, your relatives, people at the barbershop, folks at the grocery store, your fellow workers at your work site, talk about this stuff and, you know, educate them. You know, a lot of people hear things like, Trump wants a bloodbath, and just tell them no. He said there would be a bloodbath in the auto industry if at that time Biden got reelected. He said both sides in Charlottesville were very fine people. No, he said that did not apply to the white nationalists and the neo-Nazis. And just explain to people a lot of what they've heard, unfortunately, if they just listen to the regular regime media, is either inaccurate or an outright lie or totally fabricated or any combination of the three. And so if nothing else, you just give people the facts, the figures, the reality and the truth. I think that will be a huge service. And so I urge everybody who's listening to us, you know, if you can write a check for $100,000, please do. But if you don't, you know, register to vote, make sure you folks you know are registered to vote. And then, you know, educate those people in your own circle about the truth about Trump and Vance. And frankly, the view, I think, that we're all better off under Trump than we back in his time than we are currently under Kamala Harris. And if you want to keep bring the good times back, the answer is obvious. Vote for Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, it's a completely obvious answer. You're absolutely right. Droy, thank you. As always, we love talking to you. Thanks for being here.
Great talking to you. Okay, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Droy Murdoch, nationally syndicated columnist and Fox News contributor. Great to have him on the show with us. When we come back, I'm really excited to have Todd Sivia in studio with us, a new sponsor of the Annie Fry Show. He is the attorney and owner at Sivia Law. You can go to Sivia, SiviaLaw.com to learn more about what he can help you with, especially when it comes to wills, trusts, estate, probate questions. These are questions that I often have because you don't know about this stuff until you know. Maybe you have a friend or a family member that is having to deal with an estate that really wasn't planned out or filed or thought through. I want you to give us a comment on the Annie Fry YouTube channel if you have questions you would like me to ask Todd about estate planning and recommendations on how to get this done in a way that might be unique to your situation or just general questions that you have. Powers of attorney as well. He is ready to answer your questions. We're going to have some conversations with him for the rest of the 1 o'clock hour. So I'd love to include your thoughts and questions in that as well with Todd Sivia, who's in studio with us here on the Annie Fry Show next. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Fresh off of a vice presidential debate evening and feeling pretty good, feeling better than all right, I might say, about the debate performance of J.D. Vance last night. We'll talk more about that in the 2 o'clock hour. We got some fun reaction video. I have some fun things I can't wait to show you. And I don't know how much of this that you, Brad and Ryan, have seen, but there's some good stuff, reaction stuff out there that we'll talk about here in the 2 o'clock hour. But I'm also excited to welcome into our studio, we've got Todd Sivia in here, and Sivia Law is a new sponsor here on the Annie Fry Show. But I've been in the same circles as Todd Sivia for quite some time, and I was really excited to be able to bring on somebody who I can recommend to you when it comes to planning your estate. This is something people have a ton of questions about, and you kind of get analysis paralysis when it comes time to going in and making the decisions. It just seems so overwhelming. Todd, first of all, welcome into the studio. Thank you for being in here.
Well, thank you so much.
One of the things that was really astonishing to me is that when it comes to wills and trusts and powers of attorney, you have a 2-week turnaround for completed documents.
Absolutely.
From that first sit down strategy session.
Absolutely. From that strategy session, you know, we're usually there. We're trying to get everything completed. We have a very refined process because. You know, I can give you example upon example where people waited, they sat down and talked to me, and then within 2 or 3 months, they pass away, and they still don't have anything signed. And, you know, if you don't have it signed, there is no estate plan. So it is so important for, you know, a quick turnaround with the process. I was actually talking to some guys from Farm Credit. Where, you know, they would see guys that, you know, spend 6 months to a year going through the process and trying to get the estate completed. And, you know, there's usually a, you know, from our perspective, we want to give you a plan. We want to tell you exactly, here's your process, here's the steps, here's where we think we're going to resolve things mm-hmm. and move forward. So,
yeah. I people are talking about how long probate takes on the YouTube live chat poll. For you to be able to commit to a 2-week turnaround for this estate plan versus how long does it take? Should that estate planning not get done?
Oh, yeah.
Everything goes into probate. Probate's a word that I think a lot of people have heard, but maybe don't really understand.
Yeah.
What is probate and what is the consequence of not spending just that 2-week time period to get this done?
Absolutely. So probate is a process. Basically, you file a lawsuit against each other, and you go through this process, and it's called probate because no one can sign, for example, the deed to the house. No one can sign that. The only person that can sign is a judge. So you have to go through this whole process and making sure everything is tidied up and accounted for and everything else like that. In the state of Illinois, it's a 2-year process. So, you know, and with that, you know, I always go back to my Uncle Gene. My Uncle Gene, love him to death, he had a will. And wills, and, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but wills go through probate. And if you have a will, it goes through probate. And in his circumstance, he had 26 nieces and nephews that he left a little portion to each one of us. And he passed away. And I was one of those 26 nieces and nephews that received funds. And through that process, it took 2 years. And after it was done, my mom said one poignant comment that I thought was that I share with everybody is, we can now start the grieving process.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's now done. So that's the hardship with regards to probate. Whereas my grandfather, he had a trust, and, you know, my mom was the sole beneficiary of that trust. And my mom came to me at the funeral of my grandfather and said, what's my next steps? I said, well, Mom, go into the bank, change the name from you from the trust to you, and you're done.
And that's it.
That's it for her. So, you know, it doesn't always get that. It's not always that simple. But she was a sole owner, a sole beneficiary of that trust.
So I want to talk about trusts versus wills. You've mentioned that wills always go through probate.
Yes.
Trusts give you an extra shield of privacy.
Yep.
Speed, potential loss of money.
Yeah.
What does a will do? Let's start at the beginning. What's the difference between a will and a trust?
Will and a trust. The difference between a will and a trust. I mean, the will is specifying all your directions. But in order to enforce it, we have to prove that it is in existence. And that is the last will. So you have to go through and file the probate action to get it approved that that was the last will. Whereas if it's a trust, the trust is already there and everything is titled into that name of the trust, which is kind of a key important point, making sure that it's funded. But that's really the difference is probate, you know, will is having a certain direction and versus a trust, which continues life beyond the person's death.
Yeah.
So that's an important distinction between the two.
I think it's so important for people to know these things and to be able to ask questions about it because it's hard to know anything about this world until you have a brush with it. And hopefully your first brush with it isn't where you are very personally attached to the situation. You might hear of a friend who's experiencing loss of a parent or something like that. And it's super easy for them. And they're so grateful that everything was set up so that it was turnkey like that. Or often it's a disaster.
It's typically the disaster. That's what you're hearing is, oh my gosh, you know, I got to go through, got to go to court, I got to go do this, I got to go talk to the attorney. And it's not just one time visiting the attorney, it's multiple times I got to visit the attorney's office and go through this accounting. And oh, by the way, you're in court. So if anybody wants to fight anything, you're already in court.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got a lawyer for the estate, you know, one of your relatives may have a lawyer that fights different issues. So
talk to me about when somebody creates a trust, they designate a trustee, maybe trustees.
Yes.
What is that person? What does that mean to be a trustee?
Trustee is basically just the handler of the assets. So they're responsible. So you want somebody responsible to manage the trust or manage whatever. And it's somebody that is good with money. You know, a lot of times you find somebody that they do it based upon birth order or this or that. They really don't think, well, are they really good with money? Can they manage it? You know, do they get overwhelmed with circumstances? You know, how are they during crises? And, you know, how many times have they bought and sold a house? Because those are the end of life things that we have to handle.
Is there a difference between being a trustee and an heir?
The difference between a trustee and an heir is the trustee is managing the money. And they could be one and the same. So, you know, maybe, you know, like, I've got three kids at home. You know, if I named them, one of them as a trustee, then they could manage everything, sell off everything, and also be the heir. Heir is the person that is receiving those benefits.
Mm-hmm. But you might be an heir and not a trustee.
Correct.
And still entitled to what is determined by what is set by the individuals who created the trustee? Like, what kind of decision-making power does the trustee have, or is that usually stipulated before they become the trustee?
It's all set out in the terms. So it's very clear on these terms, and it's based upon what the document says. You know, it depends upon how long the trust is and what authority it gives you in different circumstances. So, you know, is the person alive? Is the person dead? Are they managing the assets today while we're dealing with nursing homes or something along those lines?
Somebody's incapacitated,
right? Or is it after post death? And there's different rules with regards to to all of that, and what we're looking for as an attorney, you know, what are the issues that we've got to speak about? So
yeah, it's all very, very important stuff, because once the time passes and it's too late, it is officially too late. The website is civialaw.com, SIVIA law.com, and we're speaking with Todd Sivia of Sivia Law. He's the owner and attorney at Sivia Law. They have locations in Edwardsville, Wentzville, East Dalton, Swansea, and Mount Vernon. We're going to take a break here because I've got some thoughts and comments coming in from people who are reacting to this conversation. And if you have a specific question that you would like me to ask our expert attorney, Todd Sivia, Annie Fry YouTube channel, come on there and just leave a comment and let us know a question in the comment section, what we can ask Todd and get some expertise answer to your question. So go to civialaw.com in the break. And when we come back, we'll get to some of your questions and thoughts with Todd Sivia in studio on the Annie Fry Show. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Ryan, you said there are a ton of questions coming in on the YouTube channel.
I am not talking much because I'm trying to keep up with them.
Okay.
So, yes.
If you have questions for Todd Sivia of SiviaLaw.com, new sponsor of the Annie Fry Show and friend of mine, excited to have him a part of the Annie Fry Show family, estate planning, wills, trust. I will also tell you right now, you need to give him a call directly if you have any questions about anything regarding estate planning, wills, powers of attorney, so on and so forth. 833-995-WILL. That's 833-995-WILL. Or civialaw.com, and I will tell you he has multiple locations in Missouri and Illinois. He can serve both of those areas, so please reach out to him directly with personal personal ones that you might want to talk in a little more depth with. So before we get to your questions, real quick, Todd, I wanted to talk to you about the aid in attendance pension. A lot of people know that if you're like kind of a part of it, the ANA pension, that veterans, I know that you are very passionate about supporting yes. veterans, and this is something that if you are a veteran or the spouse of a veteran, you have to know about this,
yes.
and you spend your time connecting veterans with these very, very important benefits.
Yes, absolutely. My grandfather was a Korean War veteran, and he was in a nursing home, and he had long-term care, but they were short on cash. You know, I mean, the cost of long-term care is $10,000 a month, and that's for to take care of you in your golden years. And you know, my grandfather had Alzheimer's, but because he was a Korean War veteran, he qualified for a program called Aid in Attendance. And aid in attendance is $2,600 a month if you need assistance. And there are asset requirements, there's income requirements and things of that sort. But just because somebody says, oh, you know, I've got too much in assets, doesn't mean that we can't get you qualified for that and plan for it. We just need time. And it's so important to get that situated in time. And the most important thing is the spouse of the veteran can also qualify for that benefit as well. It's lesser amount, but it's $1,300. And you know, I've seen the numbers for a lot of clients. That extra $2,600 or even that extra $1,300 to help them in assisted living or skilled care is so important in those end of the life years. And I think that's a difference in our law firm is we focus in on that more of that elder law care and where we're planning for, we're not planning just for the probate. We're planning for everything before the end of life, making sure that everything is you've got your living wills, you've got your power of attorneys, and everything before death is all put together.
Yeah, and you can trust the people at Sivia Law to be able to guide you through this. This is one of their passion projects,
yeah.
and certainly fits the bill here for us, as we are very grateful for our veterans as well. And I want to tell you folks to, if you are a veteran or if you're the spouse of a veteran, to put this on your calendar. On Veterans Day, Sivia Law is offering to the first 20 veterans that call each of their 5 offices. You have to reach out to them on Veterans Day for the first 20 veterans at each of their 5 offices that call 833-995-WILL on Veterans Day are going to receive complimentary health and financial powers of attorney. and that is the Civia Law sign of gratitude for your service. This is a $300 value, and if you are the first to call on Veterans Day, that number, 833-995-WILL, on Veterans Day, first 20, you get that opportunity complimentary of Civia Law. So I really appreciate you extending that as part of our partnership with them.
Absolutely.
To start out here. It's a great way to thank our veterans. Brad, let's go to you first. You got a question from somebody on the Annie Frank YouTube channel?
This one's from Robert on the chat, and he wants to know the difference between a trustee and an executor. And I had a follow-up question to that after.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time with trustees and executors, they could be one and the same, because one, the trustee refers to the trust, a executor refers to a will. So it's just it's the same type of person, but it's the different instrument. So one could be, you know, if you have a trust, you may have a pour over will and a trust, and they may be the same people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it could be the same people, but with wills, it's called executors, and trust, it's called trustees.
Okay. So I've been made executor on some family members, different family members ones. And one of the things that I wanted to ask is do you, one family member is very precise, very, you know, all T's crossed, all I's dotted, that sort of thing. Do you guys ever do any sort of, like, if they want to come in and, hey, this is what I have, can you double check my homework kind of checkup on a will, on a trust, or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. We always are willing to take a look at the different, what you have. And, you know, we always follow up and say, you know, do you have everything situated? Because, you know, I've seen a lot of attorneys where they'll draft all these wonderful documents, but then I ask them, okay, what on your bank account? Who owns your bank account? Mm. You have a trust, but is your bank account owned by the trust? And I would say 99% of the time, that's not the case.
Oh man.
So the checkup is maybe a good idea.
The checkup is kind of a good thing. You know, because you spend all this money on a trust, and in all reality, it all goes through probate anyway, because nothing is titled. That, you know,
that's
that
why you need to have somebody in charge that knows these details.
Yep.
Because you can think you're doing everything, and then you miss out on one major detail that you just didn't know about, or they didn't know about, and big problems.
Yeah, trust funding is like, if you go to an attorney and they don't offer trust funding, I'd
when
walk
you say
out.
Trust mm-hmm. funding,
yeah,
what do you mean by funding the trust?
Funding means putting all your assets into the trust,
making sure that it's
making sure that
all the way through,
all the way through, because you may have beneficiaries on something. Mm. And if you have a beneficiary on something, that eliminates everything you did in your trust or everything in your will.
So if I have a beneficiary on my 401k or a life insurance policy through my work, mm-hmm.
that supersedes
what
everything.
The trust says.
Correct. So if you for example, if you have kids,
and I got a lot of them,
and you name them as your beneficiary on your life insurance policy, and they're under the age of 18, it drops to them,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't follow your will.
But I can name my trust as my beneficiary.
You name your
on the life insurance.
On the life insurance.
And that is called funding the trust.
That's called funding.
Ryan?
Annie made me put her as beneficiary on all my stuff. Is that
part
sound?
As part of
that's
your,
what I, that's
part
what
of
I
your
heard.
Responsibility. Yeah. That's why I had hired Todd. You're going to have him check it and make sure you did it
so
right.
This was very off the record. I don't know if she knew I was going to ask you this live.
This is embarrassing.
Yeah. Is that okay?
Well, yeah, that's fine.
Work. Yes.
It's fine. Oh, good.
Are you kidding me? He gets 10%.
Gosh. You guys might be in on this. All right, I'm going to pull up. There's a bunch of listener questions. I'm going to start with an easy one here. Does Todd practice in both Missouri and Illinois?
Absolutely.
Okay. I figured that one would be pretty quick. Next one is, and this sounds like it's probably like an internal family question.
Yeah.
Can there be rules placed on the trustee?
Yes.
Yeah. Like what kind of rules are common?
You name it. I love talking to people about what their passions are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got trustees or families that say you have to start your own business in order to get anything. You have to get married to get anything. There's two good families that we can talk about. We can talk about the Vandevetters. and the Rockefellers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's the kind of money we're talking about in Yorkville,
yeah,
right, Ryan? Just want to make sure.
But
no.
But any type of wealth. And it doesn't matter if it's a small wealth or a big wealth. But
there's Wiggins to Rockefellers.
There's Rockefellers.
That's the spectrum.
But the Vandeveders, if we watch them, within three generations, all that money was gone. If you look at the Rockefellers, they set it up to refund itself, and the Rockefeller money is still around.
Wow.
So within three generations, it could be gone. So
you have another one?
Yeah. This one is over my head. I'm going to ask it and just assume that okay. You know what he's talking about. Rick asks, talk about family trust versus separate trust for both spouses.
Ah.
Okay. This is pretty deep, right?
That gets a little deep.
Okay.
So, in different situations, there may be a time where you have a trust for one person versus, you know, a husband and wife.
Is this like blended family stuff?
Blended families are a good example. Another time is if we have a tax problem and we need to separate the estate. You know, a lot of times that happens as well. But I generally do joint trust versus the other way, just so that it is one consistent plan.
You're so far above me that what I'm hearing is, you know what this is.
Yes,
I know exactly what that is.
So basically, if you relate to this problem that Rick commented about, civula.com.
Yeah.
What other ones you got, Ryan?
Let's see. Just people talking about how important this is. So many people giving a little bit of their stories, you know, adding a question here or there. I got a question just personally. I think the last time we had to deal with anything like this in my family, I was pretty young. I was probably just barely an adult.
Okay.
So I was aware that this was happening, but I wasn't really involved in it.
Yep.
And I think that it had to do with a will that was just written on a piece of paper. Is that actually a legal document?
It is not a legal document. It's called a holographic will.
That sounds very futuristic.
Yes. But a lot of times those don't come into play. You have to have certain requirements, certain witness requirements, certain notary requirements. And then you have, okay, you know, I love Illinois.
tell us about it,
I will
but I recognize a lot of, you know, my clients don't always like Illinois and they may leave Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Why?
So then you have, you know, all the notarization requirements of those different states. So typically when we handle a trust fund or trust signing, we're usually having, you know, two witnesses and a notary to be present and have everything situated, because that covers like 49 out of the 50 states.
Okay.
So, you know, the requirements of, you know, like doing things on LegalZoom and things of that sort. If you don't cross your T's, dot your I's, make sure everything is situated, you may sign something and not realize, oh, I needed extra people on this or that. So it's important to, again, draft it like you want.
So how often should somebody go back and revisit looking at their will, their trust, or whatever?
So I always say any kind of life changes.
Okay.
Tax law changes. So I anticipate that next year as a big issue.
All toward the positive, right?
Can we go back and complain about Illinois?
Okay. Anyway, but after that, it's usually 3 to 5 years. You know, I love people. Not everybody loves to see me as their attorney. So, you know, I'm usually trying to predict things and think through things, the what ifs in the world. So, you know, if I've thought through all the what ifs, you know, it's usually 5 years. Before I see them again.
Okay. Brad, so. I know we got, 90 seconds left here, 5750?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
If we need an extra minute, but let's try to get Katie's question here, because this is kind of specific, but going through this process myself, I know I can relate to what she's asking here. If a will states how they want a trustee to distribute money. For instance, once a kid turns 18, they can have $5,000. When they turn 21, they can have the rest. Is the trustee forced to follow that request in the will?
So typically they are supposed to be supposed to follow that, unless there is additional language in it that's called HEMS, health, education, maintenance, and support. So if those provisions are in there, then it's a little bit looser. The trustee has discretion to pay those things out. You know, for example, if the kid wants to buy a car or go to college or something along those lines, and that's typical. You want that language in there to have options.
So. Yeah. Okay. Well, Todd, I really appreciate you being in here today. And a lot of people, there are more questions coming in. A lot of people complimenting the fact that we're doing this segment. So if you would be so kind as to, can we have you back?
Oh, I'm sure you can.
We'll talk to your people.
We'll talk to your people, and we'll hijack you for another couple of segments, maybe in another month or so, because there are a lot of unique situations, but when you start talking about it, it just is more, I mean, I hear these, and it causes you to kind of feel that tightness, that anxiety of, oh my gosh, I haven't planned for this, and I haven't planned for that, which is why you turn it over to somebody. It's, I think, way more affordable than people think it's going to be, and to know that you could have all of those questions asked and all of those documents completed in 2 weeks from that initial strategy session with Civia Law. Oh my gosh, why aren't you doing this right now? Like, just do it, get it done, and then you don't have to, every time you think about it, you exhale because you're like, I did it. Pat myself on the back, it actually is done. And then if you have questions or changes, they can come back and see you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Todd Civia with Civia Law, thank you for being here with us today. A reminder, they have locations in Edwardsville, Wentzville, East Dalton, Swansea, and Mount Vernon. You can book your strategy session right now by calling 833-995-WILL, 833-995-WILL. One more time, 833-995-WILL. So happy to have the Civia Law Firm as partners here with us on the Annie Fry Show. CiviaLaw.com, and more debate conversation next. Don't go away.